Well, looking ahead, tomorrow, Jamie Dimon, CEO of JPMorgan Chase, is expected to become Washington's latest Wall Street whipping boy, summoned to the first of two congressional hearings this month to explain how JPMorgan Chase lost at least $2 billion in trading last month, losses that Dimon at first called no big deal, a tempest in a teapot, but later admitted were egregious mistakes. Quite a turnaround for someone who'd been called President Obama's favorite banker because he was the Wall Street guy who got it right during the financial crisis. He still has many defenders on Wall Street who say he didn't do anything wrong, and they have a lot at stake. He's been their biggest voice in the fight against tougher regulations. So where exactly are we on the story of JPMorgan Chase and what those headlines mean? We want to spend a few minutes today with New York Times columnist Gretchen Morgenson in another of our recurring series, No Question Too Stupid to Ask. She's going to take us through this and joins us from the newspaper's radio studio in New York. Gretchen, welcome back.
How are you, Robin?
I'm fine. And I want to start with some banking 101 to get us started. And we understand that one of the questions here is how risky the trading got at JPMorgan Chase. And that involves the thinking about hedging, that, you know, banks, investment houses try to hedge their bets if they – well, you give us an example of what hedging might be.
Okay. JPMorgan Chase, as all commercial banks, makes loans to companies, to individuals. Let's take, for instance, if they had a big exposure, or if they had made a lot of loans to, say, corporations in France, they would want to make sure that they were not exposed to a downturn in the economy in France. And so how they would do that would be to sort of neutralize their portfolio of French loans, neutralize it somehow. Maybe they would go into the market and sell short corporate loans in France. They want to just not be exposed to a downturn in the economy.
It's sort of like making a bet for and against something. Like we'd heard during the housing crisis that some houses were, investment houses were, maybe investing a lot in mortgages, but then also investing in kind of an insurance that would pay you if the mortgages fail. It's kind of making bets on both sides of the equation.
That's right. And so what that does for the bank is it it keeps it more on a neutral footing if there were to be some sort of a, calamitous event in, say, France, to continue our example.
And we understand that when Jamie Dimon became CEO of JPMorgan Chase in 2005, he pushed for the bank to take greater risks. Now, would this mean, you know, less hedging of your bets? In other words, putting more of your eggs in one basket, not all, but more, and not offsetting it as much?
Well, you see, the problem, Robin, right now is that banks as individuals are having trouble making a big investment return. Interest rates are at rock bottom lows, and so it's encouraging people all over to take more risks. So it's not surprising that in this interest rate environment, you would see banking institutions reaching out the risk scale to try to generate more returns. That in itself is not surprising. But what is interesting about this circumstance is that it began as a neutral position, as a sort of hedging of J.P. Morgan's loan business, and then morphed into something much bigger, much more of a bet, much more of a directional bet. And, you know, how it came to be that it began that way and ended up as something completely different without the top management of J.P. Morgan Chase knowing is a very interesting question.
Well, when we get to whether or not, I mean, this is what Congress is going to be getting at. They want to know whether management knew. But the other question we have, just to lay out the groundwork here, is what money was used? There's something called proprietary investments. We know that J.P. Morgan was an investment house that bought a bank, Chase. J.P. Morgan makes investments. Chase takes in money from depositors. So what was the money that was used in these riskier and riskier bets?
This bet took place in the Chief Investment Office, which is the office that tries to use the bank's money to the best advantage, i.e. make the most money that they can on the bank's funds.
But whose money is it? You know, in other words, is it from people who've just put deposits in Chase, or is it money that, J.P. Morgan has made on past investments?
That's correct. It's money that J.P. Morgan Chase has made. It is not customer deposits.
Okay. Is that why it's called proprietary?
Proprietary trading is, yes, that is when the bank or the institution takes its own money, puts it at risk, and tries to make a profit.
And that's not illegal.
That's not illegal. In fact, it's very profitable. What it is a topic of great discussion right now in Washington, because proprietary trading in an institution like JPMorgan Chase, like Citigroup, that is implicitly backed by the taxpayer, you then have to worry about whether these bets get too big, get too risky, and then will require a bailout.
Okay. And that's where the Volcker Rule comes in. What would the Volcker Rule do? It would be part of Dodd-Frank, the reform legislation. What would it do about proprietary trading?
It would separate proprietary trading, ideally, from a commercial bank's activities so as to eliminate the potential for taxpayers to be on the hook if there was a very big loss in a proprietary trading desk. Now, let's remember that this $2 billion loss, even if it grows to $5 billion, which is a number that people have bandied about J.P. Morgan, is not imperiling the bank. It is a huge institution, and this does not, by no means imperil that bank. But the idea of the Volcker Rule and separating proprietary trading from commercial banking activities is definitely something that is topic A and really needs to be hashed out and discussed, because we do not want more bailouts on the taxpayers' back.
And this is something Jamie Dimon had been fighting.
Correct.
Okay. Well, we go back to our storyline. He takes over the bank, and then the Global Treasury Unit, which was led by Ina Drew, is made a separate unit from the investment bank. She becomes chief investment officer. She has a trader in London. He was known as the London Whale because his trades were so big. And here's where the story just gets worthy of a novel. As Gail Collins, I think, wrote in the New York Times, if not for the tick, Ina Drew is bitten by a deer tick. She has severe medical problems. There's also infighting in that office. How does this all impact the eventual headline of a $2 billion loss?
Anybody who has worked in a corporation knows how much infighting there can be, but the fact of the matter is such things should not imperil the bank and should not imperil it with a $2 billion loss. So this just illustrates to me a kind of lackadaisical approach to management of this institution and this unit. And so I think that is why Jamie Dimon is coming under scrutiny now, because he had this reputation of being a very, very hands-on and careful manager. And this just makes everyone wonder whether or not that is the case.
Or, you know, there might be another question. What does it mean if he did know what was going on? Gretchen Morgenson is assistant business and financial editor and columnist for the New York Times. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll ask that question. Was it bad management, you know, not knowing what was going on, or maybe knowing what was going on? But also, how might Congress move to tighten financial regulations because of these losses at J.P. Morgan Chase? That's in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about J.P. Morgan Chase and its CEO, Jamie Dimon. He heads to Congress tomorrow for the first of two congressional hearings this month on how his bank lost at least $2 billion in risky trades. Some Democrats are also asking whether some financial regulation is needed if a bank that was supposed to be so well managed as J.P. Morgan Chase was missed these looming losses, became too big to manage. We're speaking with New York Times financial columnist Gretchen Morgenson. And Gretchen, you were just talking about, you know, questions of perhaps lackadaisical management by Jamie Dimon, not paying attention to his bank's chief investment office. We wondered, you know, what if he actually knew what was going on? So what will Congress want to know tomorrow?
What he knew, when he knew it, and how this was able to happen, I think, are the crucial questions. In a bank that is enormous, that is implicitly backed by the taxpayers, we have to be certain that these institutions are not too big to manage. If someone who is as astute and hands-on as Jamie Dimon is reputed to be would let this kind of a trade go awry.
Well, but then what to make of the Bloomberg article about all the bigwigs on Wall Street walking in lockstep, saying they don't think Jamie Dimon did anything wrong, that in fact losses like this, which, as you've said, the bank can absorb, are part of banking?
Well, he himself has admitted that he made a mistake. He himself has admitted that it was egregious, an egregious error, and has taken responsibility for it. So I don't think he agrees with that assessment at all. The idea that you could have a $2 billion loss, maybe $5 billion, we don't know yet, in an operation and not have known about it and to have it sort of get out of control as it was, I think is an indication of a management misstep. Saying that he has done nothing wrong, I mean, certainly would not say he's done anything illegal, but as a manager, you're supposed to be on top of these things.
And what about the sense of things becoming illegal? In other words, more regulated. Is there a sense that, you know, you talked about the fear of now you not only have an investment house, but you have a bank with depositors tied to it, J.P. Morgan Chase. Is there a sense of ever going back to Glass-Steagall, the separation of investment houses from banks? Is there a sense of, as you said, the Volcker rule being enacted and banning this proprietary trading, or at least regulating it more, what requiring banks to have more capital if they're going to take these huge risks? What's your sense of, especially in this political climate, what might happen?
Well, I think that the loss at J.P. Morgan Chase really came at a crucial time. The Volcker Rule is still being hashed out. It is facing immense pressure from banking lobbyists who do not want it. And so this loss was really kind of fortuitous that it happened at this time, because it really refocused the interest on regulation and how important it is. Not that the bank is in difficulty because of the loss, but because here is a prime example of why the Volcker Rule makes sense. And so I think, if anything, this loss just really brings new focus to the idea of regulation and will make the anti-regulation crowd at least quiet down a little bit. I don't think they're going away. I think they're going to continue to try to battle against increased regulation. But this loss really, you know, has sort of cut them off at the knees for the moment.
Well, some Republicans are saying, of the things I ticked off, capitalization would do it, requiring banks to have more capital to offset these huge losses. Do you think that is a solution?
Well, higher capital requirements are absolutely important and necessary. I think there's very little disagreement on that. Bankers don't want more capital set aside because they can't invest that capital, okay? It's money that they really can't play with. So, you know, I think that we will have pushback on that. But yes, increased capital is absolutely a requirement and necessary to protect taxpayers.
But Republicans are saying it should be the only requirement. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that there are other things that really can help. I mean, I think that separating out the proprietary trading or riskier activities from the commercial banking activities is a good idea. That is sort of essential to what Glass-Steagall was. I think that, you know, there are other ways to cut these institutions down to size. For instance, maybe putting some sort of a charge or assessment on size. The bigger you get, the more you have to pay, as it were. And that would discourage people getting too big, institutions getting too big to manage, and then therefore too big to fail.
What do you mean the more you'd have to pay?
You know, a capital charge,
increased
capital.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you have a capital requirement, and then if you are a large institution, whatever the number is, whatever the size, however you measure it, then you would have an additional capital assessment.
And what about clawbacks? Jamie Dimon once said he supported them. He averaged nearly $2 million a month in salary and bonuses over the past 2 years. Ina Drew, who resigned as the head of the unit, was, I think, the second highest paid woman on Wall Street. Is there a sense that there should be, you know, stricter enforcement of clawbacks, taking back salary, if there's this kind of loss?
Absolutely. You know, I think that there is discussion inside the bank of a clawback for Ina Drew, because she was directly involved in this. So I think that we're going to have to wait and see on that. That has been discussed. But yes, the clawbacks have really been few and far between, even among institutions that were really badly managed.
Yeah. Gretchen Morgenson, you know, we're reading there were 65, 70 regulators inside the bank, you know, in offices in the same building, and still this went undetected. One financial risk expert, this is Nassim Taleb, he's a New York University professor, he told Bloomberg News that risk management on Wall Street is as amateurish as you can get, and that J.P. Morgan and the financial system are more fragile than 5 years ago in the crisis. What would you like to hear asked of Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan in Washington?
I would really like to know what this trade was. He still has not outlined the precise nature of the trade.
And how did the regulators not see it?
The regulators have been not seeing things for decades. They're a part of the groupthink within the banking industry and really have allowed banking institutions to kind of direct them rather than the alternative.
Gretchen Morgenson, assistant business and financial editor, and of course columnist for The New York Times. Gretchen, thanks as always.
You're welcome, Robin.
So your thoughts, separate banking and investment again and then don't bail out bad investments? Demand more cash on hand? Let us know what you think. Just go to hereandnow.org.